This podcast was brought to you by Spartan Sports.
This is The Running Game, a rugby podcast that covers the sport from the ground up. I'm Tim Gilbert and I'm joined by my co-host Matt Dunning. Hey mate, how are you?
Great, Timmy. How are you, mate? What a week of rugby. A final and what a great finish.
So now that you don't drink and you don't sort of have kebabs at 3 o'clock in the morning, are you just on carrot juice and orange juice and eating mandarins? Is that how you roll?
Mate, a bit close. No, I'm still not eating great. I still have a pizza and watch the football. I still indulge and still have ice cream and probably need to have a bit less, but no, that's sort of my vices these days.
Yeah, no, you sound like you're pretty well behaved. All right, on the show today, it's a cracking show. Sean Graham, the rugby director from St. Joseph's Nudgee College, and a great teammate of yours, Morgan Tuanui. Alrighty, Matty Dunning, what a win by the Queensland Reds.
Mate, sensational. It wasn't an unbelievable game. What an unbelievable trilogy between these two sides. You know, the Brumbies have virtually led for 99% of all three games. They've ended up losing all three and losing a final. But what a great advertisement for rugby. More, you know, 42,000 people watching rugby again. There was buzz during this week about the final, even though I'm in New South Wales. I think, you know, rugby's making a climb back up where it needs to be. It's all positive with rugby at the moment. I'm really happy to be part of it.
All right, buddy. Now, Dumb and Dunning, front page of the paper, 2 weeks in a row. You gave us part one last week. Give us part two, warts and all. What happened?
Oh, I forgot we were doing this. Yeah, so part one was the recap was the drop goal, and then the next morning reading the paper called Dumb and Dunning, and on the back of needing four tries and only getting two and kicking a drop goal. Then, as you know, as I said, I turned up at the Silly Sunday proceedings and they all had shirts with Dumb and Dunning on them, with the actual back page imprinted on them. Yeah, very funny. Anyway, obviously you don't stop on Sunday after a season, so the next day was Mad Monday. So, I end up going to I used to start at the Brower pub for Mad Monday because I lived there on my own and start there at about 10 a.m. and got up there and met a mate of mine called Jimmy, and he wasn't working that day. And anyway, so I said, why don't you come into Mad Monday with me? So we end up getting a train into the Surry Hills to meet, you know, at the Forester there, I think it was, at 2 o'clock. So we started Mad Monday. I brought a friend. I was the only guy who brought a friend into Mad Monday. You know, it was dress up, and Jimmy wasn't dressed up, but we got him a hat or something, and he was talking to the players, and I introduced him to everyone, and he's having a bit of a almost famous moment, as he calls it, and you know, everyone's loving Jimmy, and you know, he got to meet Les Kiss, his childhood idol. Yeah, he was our defence coach, the great Bear. He's a big Bears fan, Jimmy, my mate Jimmy. Anyway, it's a great night, and anyway, so Jimmy leaves about 6 o'clock with a leprechaun hat that one of the boys gave him, and you know, and he had a great time, and I stayed out with the boys anyway. You know, we end up at the Scoo Bar, as you always do on a Monday night. Anyway, me and a good mate of mine, Des Tuivai, got into a bit of an altercation in the early hours. And, I think he might have accidentally headbutted my fist. Anyway, long story short, the next Sunday he said, Dumb and Dunning Part 2. And it's a picture of me on the paper having an altercation with a teammate. It didn't go too well for either of us, but it was quite funny because, you know, after it came out, Jimmy rang me and goes, Matty, what happened? I said, what do you mean? He goes, the last person before I left, you said I had to meet your very best friend, was Des Tuivai. And we sat there with half an hour for him, and I got to meet Desi, and then I read this in the paper. So that was Dumb and Dunning Part 2, mate. So a little bit, you got to laugh, otherwise you cry.
You're still friends with Des?
Oh, Des is a great bloke. So it didn't go well for Des either, because he got in trouble for some of his actions that night too. But look, it was just boys being boys. And in those days, it probably wasn't great, but not as bad. But you know, sometimes footy players have a bit of fun, too much fun sometimes.
Dumb and Dunning, part one and part two. You're a character, mate. There's little question of that. And all your players that you played with knew about it, but they all loved you as a player as well. Coming up is one of them, Morgan Tuanui on The Running Game. All right, I don't know how to introduce this next guy, former Wallaby, wears so many caps. Of course, he's been a coach at the highest level. He's a broadcaster. Morgan Tuanui, how are you?
Not too bad, gents. Just a little bit of it's a rugby hangover almost, trying to come back down from what was an amazing final on the weekend.
Yeah, Morg's talking about the final. What a great game. What a great last three games between these teams. It's unbelievable how close the games have been in all three, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's almost been a competition in two. We think five's a small amount to run Super Rugby AU. These two were impressive from round one. Now, the two that everyone talked about before the season, they delivered right throughout. Obviously, the final in terms of, you know, pure rugby wasn't the greatest, but that's finals. Tucker, you know that better than anyone. Playing in a final, it's about winning. There's no bonus points. You don't take pictures. It's a bit like you trying to get it up the fairway and into the hole. It doesn't matter how you do it. It just matters the number you put down. And the Reds, they just toughed it out so well. And the finish was probably what made the whole game.
Yeah, and if you bounce off a tree and it goes back on the fairway, who cares either way? But now, Morgan, James O'Connor, what a great story of redemption it is. And he's still, look, because he started so young, a lot of people think, oh, he must be in his late 30s, but he's still around that 30 mark, so he's still got a lot to offer.
Yeah, it's been great to see the boy become a man. I think that's probably the best way I've heard it encapsulated as people started talking about it. I don't know if you saw it, but Ros Kelly did a really great sit-down for Stan Sport with him.
I just
got so much insight into the human being behind it. You know, we see, famously, he referred to himself at one stage as a brand. It's been amazing to see him come through, and it's no secret that your footy goes well too. You're a better person, you're more mature, he understands his place in the world, he's comfortable in himself. It's a really great lesson for all of us, maybe too, to have some patience with our young stars. We've got the Pattaya's and the McDermott's and that great back row involving guys like Wilson and McWright. They're going to have peaks and troughs in their form, and I think it's a great thing to have both a Brad Thorne and a James O'Connor around some of our young stars. And it was very apt, wasn't it, gents, to see him score that winning try. And even, funny enough, you know what I was even more impressed about was the conversion. I reckon if it was me after I just won the comp, I'd probably just kick it off the tee and go and celebrate with my mates. But he went back, went through his process and really gave the conversion the respect it deserved as well when the game was already over. So much to be impressed about James O'Connor thus far this year.
Yeah, Morgs, I thought James was outstanding, massive Brad Thorne fan. The way the game ended, obviously a little bit of talk today and yesterday about the penalties at the end. How did you see that? Did you see it unfair, or was it justified at the end?
It was madcap. It reminded me of that Bledisloe last year, the 8 minutes after full time, where you got a feel for a referee. He doesn't want to be the one to decide it. I think probably the biggest one I thought was, during the game, I thought Taniela had lost control of that ball in the penultimate phase. He definitely loses the ball. Now, whether it goes forward or back, I've got no idea, but I could just see with his hand position and where the ball came out that he was definitely not in control. In terms of the penalties, I saw a penalty in all of those plays that Nick Berry did. So there were penalties there. There was one where he didn't stick his arm out, and then once they did the review, he came and said, I'm going back for a penalty to the Reds, which will create a bit of confusion because the arm wasn't out. But if you look along the line of the try line, there's half a dozen Brumbies players, and the one closest to the ruck are all offside in front of the line. So I think the penalties are all justified. If I'm the Brumbies, I'm thinking, well, gee, in a different world, perhaps Taniela Tupou under that melee of people does knock the ball on. But how you would ever judge that, I don't know.
Now, with the new and expanded coverage of levels that Stan brings to the table, you're part of the broadcast. Can you see the buy-in, Morgan?
Yeah, I can. I can see it at all levels of the game. And you'd know better than anyone, Tim, and I try not to tell too many people because I don't want the secret to get out, but it's just such an amazing role to be able to have, such a privilege to be involved. It's obviously you've got the great brand, the experience of the wide world of sports, and then this young, innovative, new kid on the block in Stan Sport, and just trying to be positive about rugby. And I think that's resonated with people. I know I've got a lot of improvements to continue to try and find in terms of the way I deliver and commentate and stuff. But being part of a group of people that want to be positive about the game, talk up our players, talk up the game, create heroes, create connection between a new generation coming through and the people that support the game, I think that's why everyone within the game and you know people jumping on have enjoyed it. And that's why we've been very lucky, I think, with the players and coaches as well, that buy-in from them. You know, sometimes we go, well, we've got this idea, what do you think? And they go, yeah, let's give it a try. Spider cams and cine cams and you know, little specials around clubs and even individuals and going out to people's houses. You saw the sit down with James O'Connor that we mentioned, being invited into someone's home. I think because there's an element of trust that we're going to always try and find the positive. It's been great.
Yeah, Morgs, look, I think what Stan's done is tremendous to Australian rugby and what needed. Like for the last few years and period of time, like rock bottoms just seem to get lower and lower. And I actually see us coming out of the back of it. And I see rugby heading in the right direction. 42,000 on the weekend shows that. And I think Stan's got a big part of that. I know you're part of the team, so you're a bit biased, hopefully. But are you seeing that too? Are you seeing the vibe in rugby? Because we are on free-to-air, we are to the masses, that we're starting to see that at all levels. Your club close to Randwick, so your sons go to Waverley, so you're seeing that grassroots. Are you seeing the same thing?
Yeah, look, I think the funny thing was there was an incident over the weekend where on, I think it was on game day, the Courier Mail didn't run anything really big around rugby. And I saw on social media, I was up in Beef Week in Rockhampton and there were Reg jerseys around. I went to the airport in Rockhampton, people wearing Reg jerseys on the flight to Brisbane. But what I saw on social media was people actually coming out and defending the game, almost, you know, having a crack at the Courier Mail, you know, here they go again, give rugby some love. And that's been a while. It's been often people criticising the game, criticising the administrators, criticising participants. I've seen people come out and defend our sport, and that's not always been a very rugby thing, and it's a new thing I've seen. And that more than anything spoke volumes to me. I just think, look, we've got issues in the game. Like Rugby Australia was a couple of days off turning the lights off and the game going amateur. That's not hyperbole. And on the back, you know, lots of sports have gone to the wall as well. But on the back of that, there were some hard decisions made. And I think we're quite lucky that a new broadcast has come on and the players have done their part. And now, obviously, we're going to go to Trans-Tasman and we'll see whether, you know, we're Group 1 form or we're a little bit lower than Group 1 form this week and the weeks to come. But it's just great to be positive around the game. We still need to work on our pathways. We still need to find a better way to produce players ready to play at the highest level. We still need Wallabies winning test matches consistently against the best in the world. But when you look at the next 6-7 years of rugby, you'll have you've got Olympics this year, Women's World Cup next year in New Zealand on our doorstep. Then you've got World Cup 23 in France, which every Australian supporter, that's if you're a rugby supporter, that's the bucket list World Cup tour you want to go on. Into Lions 25, into hopefully hosting a World Cup 27, there's no reason not to be positive.
What about, finally, we'd love to get you back on the program, Morgan, because we always enjoy talking to you. What about this bloke? What about playing with him? The only forward to go and lose weight and get fit when, I know it's Phil Waugh's line, but there's nothing new in this world. What was it like playing with this guy?
Well, I'd like to bag him in that, but I just love
him. Bag him, please.
I can't, mate, he was an amazing friend, an amazing teammate. He always worked hard. Like, you know, we used to bag, you know, both of us ended up in the Skinfolds Club at 6 a.m. sometimes on the bike together. But he's a guy that works really hard on his game and smart footy brain, great guy to have in your team environment. You know, we go on tour, which is great. We have fun and that sort of thing. But, you know, 2-3 weeks away into 5-6 weeks away from families and that, you can get sick of each other. But when you had Matt Dunning in your group, there was always positivity in the group. There's a guy I got to play golf with on Wednesdays on days off, mate. I love the bloke. I'd love to say lots of negative things around him and bag him, but and an excellent footballer and really good for young guys coming through, teaching them you know, the intricacies of some things that some of us don't know about scrummaging and the role of being a prop in a team and a squad, mate. He was if I'm picking a squad and I'm still playing, I want Matt Dunning alongside me.
I knew you would get the time to pay him off. I knew you would get the time to pay him off before he came on.
One last thing for me, and I've got to ask this, because you spoke about Group 1 form, and no one is a better judge of a racehorse than you, Morgs. No one knows that you love the horses. Mm. Mate, can you tell us about the 2003 World Cup, Melbourne Cup double. Can you tell me about that Melbourne Cup?
Well, yeah. Well, I'm starting to sound like Matt Burke. I'm telling the same story for 20 years. But it was 21 years old in World Cup camp. Wallabies have a Calcutta every year. I was on a punt, and there was this horse that no one really knew about at the time that I liked. I'd been following called Maccabi Diva. Now it sounds pretty simple these days. after she won three in a row. But she hadn't done anything yet. She'd run home well in the Caulfield Cup. But I liked her, and I was on, you know, I was on Matt Dunning's superstar prop on Big Dollars. I was just a young kid coming through, so I wasn't on much money. And I bought Maccabi Diva, I think, for about $2,000 in the Calcutta. And I asked Jeremy Paul and Owen Finnegan would always run the Calcutta, so I had to go to Jeremy Paul after and say, look, I my little Commonwealth Dolomite account, I could only get out $800. That's my max withdrawal. So can I pay you off over a couple of days? Here's $800. I'll give you $800 tomorrow, and I owe you. And then the next, so that was the Monday. And then the next day, Tuesday's a big training day. So you train in the morning, you get smashed. You train Tuesday afternoon as well. They announce the team and you get smashed. And about midday in the break, I ducked in the car with Nathan Gray and Chris Whittaker. I went, put a little trifecta in the first four on. And I jumped out of the car. I said, boys, you want to, you know, chuck in with me? You know, you want to go together? They go, no, we're all right. We don't want to waste our money. I said, okay, fine. So then 3 o'clock, team meeting. Announced the team to play Scotland in the quarterfinal that weekend in Brisbane. Watch the Melbourne Cup, Channel 7 News crews there to watch the Wallabies, watch the Melbourne Cup, and then training. So the race is run, Maccabi Diva wins, and I'm jumping up and down. I think I won about $16,000 in the Calcutta. It's Matty Giddo and I up the back jumping around, the two young blokes. How good's that? And this thing nearly flashed down the outside, almost beat it. And I was just sort of seeing, you know, what came. I was checking my tickets. And then I saw She's Archie had run second for Darren Weir at about 80-1. I said, well, I've got that. Wow. And then I go, well, what's come third? Jardine's Lookout, the overseas horse, has held on for third. So I got the trifecta at $100 on it, 1.66 times. And trifecta comes up, pays 12,000. I've won $20,000 on the trifecta. So we're up again. We're jumping around. How good's this? And then I said, oh, well, my first four's still alive. So I've won 36,000. I'm jumping around thinking, how good's this? And Eddie Jones eventually gets up and he goes, Morgan, mate, you've had a good win, mate, but we need to get on with the team session, mate. So Phil Thompson, the team manager, great Wallabies team manager, now Brumby CEO, he ducks outside. And Eddie announces the team. He's talking about strategy for Scotland. We're going to send Stirling Mortlock down their 10 channel. We're going to bash them this. I'm not even listening. I couldn't care less. I'm still already thinking about what we're going to do that night at the Fox Hotel. And we had the team meeting and Phil Thompson comes in and he goes, oh, who have you got for fourth? And I said, oh, I've two horses. One's Fantastic and one's Frightening or something. And he goes, are you sure you got Fantastic? I said, yeah, I got Fantastic. He goes, well, Fantastic's run fourth and the first horse paid 105,000.
Oh!
So the room's gone bananas. Absolutely. My boys come up to me and goes, mate, the fine's only 500 for missing train. Just pay Eddie the 500. Somehow I got through training and Eddie pulled me over after training and he absolutely tore strips off me. Mate, you look like you're running with $100,000 in your pockets. You were that slow, mate. So I was celebrating but a bit rattled with the Wallaby coach going off at me, and then George Green came up to me and goes, don't worry, mate, Eddie was just doing that to have a bit of a laugh with you. So it was an amazing day. I think I bought Matty Dunning a few beers that night. It was my shout for a few weeks to come after that.
So how much did you win all up?
It's about 140.
Holy smoke.
The best was going to the tab at Coffs. So I went to the pub actually and collecting. I took a few of the boys, scanned the ticket, and just stood back and waited for the guy to come. He nearly had a heart attack.
He gave you half the pub.
They had to give me a check and said, oh, you can't cash it for 7 days because we don't have that much money in the account until the tab comes in.
That is remarkable, Morgan. Well, I didn't know about that yarn. Now I do, and I love horses, as you both know. What a win. What an amazing win. And they say money won is twice as good as money earned when it comes to the feeling that you get. Look, congratulations on everything you've achieved so far. We'd love to catch up with you soon on the running gun.
Definitely, guys. Great to have you guys talking rugby. Love listening. I loved your one with Billy Melrose too, so keep it up, boys.
Coming up, we're going to head to Queensland, Nudgee College. Of course, James O'Connor is an alumni from Nudgee College. We have their head of rugby, Sean Graham. Look, it's time to get grassroots and let's look at one of the real mighty schools of rugby when it comes to Australia, St. Joseph's Nudgee College. And it's great to have their director of rugby with us today, Sean Graham. How are you, Sean?
Yeah, I'm great. There's a bit of a buzz around the school this morning off the back of the Reds' win. So it's a good time to be a part of Queensland rugby.
Yeah, Sean, obviously what a great win for Queensland rugby in the weekend, and I saw 42,000 people there. Did you head out? How is the buzz with rugby in Queensland after that?
Yeah, well, it's been building certainly over the last few years. And, yeah, to see Suncorp nearly at capacity for a rugby union game in Brisbane was, yeah, really reassuring that we are heading in the right direction. And yeah, I was certainly there, and there was a lot of, I think we took over 100 boarders from Nudgee, and yeah, great to see the Reds get up. And obviously we had a few boys, some old boys there in both teams. So it was, yeah, it was great to see them and witness all of that.
Yeah, the highest profile of those, of course, is James O'Connor. And when you're trying to bring young people through in any sport, if they can latch on, if they can see success in front of them from exactly the same path that they're on, it just gives them extra confidence, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, well, James is probably a little bit out of the age gap there with some of our boys, but we've got a really recent old boy that some of our boys went to school with in Rajan Pasatoa down at the Brumbies. And I think the ones where they can connect with and see their journey and see that it is possible and not that far out of reach, particularly now that we've got so many old boys who are leaving school and are getting on that professional pathway almost straight away. It's, yeah, it's certainly realistic for them.
Yeah, Sean, St. Joseph's College, Nudgee, is synonymous with rugby in Australia. You travel around the world, people know about Nudgee. I think you've had 25 Wallabies, probably more than that, but last count I thought it was about 25. You've produced numerous Reds players, players like Elton Flatley, Lockie Grant, who people would know was a great schoolboy player when I played. What makes Nudgee College the nursery it is, and why do you guys have such success, not just in on the paddock, but as a team, but also getting players to that next level?
Yeah, good question. Look, I think it's a number of things. You've got to remember at Nudgee, we've got over 800 rugby players. So firstly, it's the participation. And what drives high performance is competition for position. So when you've got 40 rugby teams, each age group, we go down six or seven deep. And, you know, there's a proportion of that that are just playing for fun, but then there's still a large percentage across each of the age groups where they are driven to be the best footy players they can. And when there's competition for spots, it means that you're getting really good outcomes in performance. So I'll give you an example. With our first 15 squad this year, we have an inclusive selection policy initially. So everyone who wants to try out can. So we start with over 100 boys that commit to our program. And then we're currently at about 35. And I couldn't name you the team. And we're only now where we got our first trial game this weekend. But nearly every spot is still really open because we just have that player depth.
Yeah, that's great. And it's great for the health of the game in this country. So who's the trial against? Tell us a little bit about a typical competition year for Nudgee.
Okay, so we play in term three after the mid-year school holiday. So that's the GPS competition sits within term three. So there's nine teams in the comp. You play eight rounds and you have a bye. And so then you spend all of term two preparing for the comp. So we're in now week four of the school term and we have our first trial game this week. And you'll normally play around six trials throughout term two into the school holidays. And then you've got to be ready to go round one because you could have essentially there's no finals. So depending on how the draw is each year, your toughest game could be in round one or two. So you've got to be ready to go. You can't build into a season as you might be able to do in, you know, other comps like Clubland. So we do a fair bit in term one as well. So a lot of stuff in the gym and position specific work. And then the bulk of our preseason is done through term two. And then, as I said, the season proper in term three. Now with the rest of the program, so our year fives all the way through there, they're running a pre-season through term two, and then the season in term three.
Yeah, so Sean, I heard what you said earlier, and you put it down to participation, and I think that is the key issue in Australian rugby, that if we work hard at our grassroots and get that participation at greater levels, I think it's going to filter through and make rugby, you know, where it was. How do you really foster that participation? How do you get that at Nudgee? Because other schools and other clubs are struggling with participation levels.
Yeah, good point. So I think the other key factor in terms of performance at the top level, like, and to build participation, your biggest asset in any sports program is the person who's in front of your athletes, and that's your coaches. So the quality of the experience for the player is the influence of that is all around the coach. So making sure that you've got good coaches and you're supporting your coaches is absolutely key. So we're really lucky at Nudgee. We've got a lot of staff, like teaching staff, who also coach. but that doesn't make up all of our 90-odd coaches. So we're relying on old boys, we're relying on external coaches, and then, also our current staff to make up our group of coaches, and then what we do around the support for those coaches. And that's not just inductions, it's ongoing support, providing them with the resources that they need to make sure that we're delivering. You know, every session is a really worthwhile one for our players. And I sort of try to keep things really simple. We look at three things after every session. The key is they've got to have fun. Now, fun's interesting. Some coaches or young kids might think fun is, you just muck around and play a bit of touch. But for the majority of boys, that's not fun. Fun is being challenged. Fun is being physically challenged, mentally challenged. They want to learn something new. They love competition. So they're the things that you need to build into your training programs to ensure that they are having fun. So they have fun, they learn something new, and they're physically challenged. If you tick those three boxes, usually the boys will come back next week.
You've been in this role for a number of years now. What is it like to see the growth of young men, the growth of character, the growth of personality, the growth of strength, which obviously comes through rugby and then lends itself to their wider life, their school life, and who they're going to be when they leave school?
Yeah, a good question. I think, as you said, I've been here 7 years, and I sometimes get asked the question, what's next? And what are you going to do after this? And I think the thing about sport and working with adolescents, you've got a new group of boys each year. So the new year five start, the year 12s graduate. So you're constantly working with a different group of boys. And as you said, to see the boys build through the years and achieve whatever the success is for them is really rewarding. And I think something that's really unique about rugby is it doesn't matter what team they play in initially, because rugby is for all shapes and sizes. If boys stick at it and they apply themselves, often there's a position for them and a job that they can do at the end of their journey at Nudgee, where they can achieve things that maybe they might not be able to do in other sports because their body shape may not suit that. So that's certainly a point of difference for our game, and why it fits so well within schools is that there is a position for all shapes and sizes. But sorry, to go back to your subject, I think, just looking at the boys and what they achieve as a group. So I think when you're dealing with boys and they're in a team environment, watching them achieve something as a group, particularly the boys that put in a lot, like these guys are training. It's for some of them, it's a semi-professional environment where they're training upwards of 5 or 6 sessions a week. And to really watch them grow, physically and mentally, and then achieve something is, it is really rewarding. And that's what keeps us in the job, I think.
Yeah, Sean, you mentioned working with adolescents. Well, you got Scottney up there. Scott's Hendrick Scottney, your head coach. I can say that I know Scott's very well. He coached us at the Western Force with our backs coach and skills coach, but a great bloke. Mate, what a qualified bloke to lead your first 15, in all seriousness.
That's something that makes the GPS comp so strong, is the quality of coaches we have within the school system. I think you'll see across all the GPS schools, there is a high caliber of coach, and a lot of them are ex-professional coaches who have come back. And we're lucky he's a qualified teacher. So he does his teaching in the classroom, or he's a PE teacher. And then, to get his expertise and his professional background, is awesome. And his best quality is the interactions that he has with the players. He loves working with the kids, and again, it's really enjoyable. So whilst it is a pretty intense sort of competition, I can tell you that the boys are turning up to training and they've got a smile on their face, and they're leaving with a smile on their face, which is what it's all about.
Absolutely. Sean, look, all the best for the competition, the trial this weekend, then term three. We'd love to tap in again and have a quick chin wag with you and see how the fortunes of Nudgee College are going. Let's talk soon.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for the call, boys.
That's it for The Running Game this week. We'll be with you every week with more rugby chat and great interviews. Follow us on your favourite podcast app. Thank you today to Morgan Tuanui and Sean Graham. Thank you also to our wonderful sponsors, Spartan Sports, and the king of podcasts, Dan McHugh, our producer. See you next time. Catch you then, Matty.
Thanks, heaps, Timmy. Looking forward to it.